You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Yeah. Now, the 18th round of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement began this week in Kota Kinabalu. Malaysia, along with 11 other countries, are actually all part of these trade negotiations. So, Sharad, demystify the whole thing for us. Why is this in the news?
Well, you know, I'm actually not the person who demystified it. I'm equally mystified. And we have somebody here who's going to help us demystify issues, David. But just to kind of put this in context and why it's in the news is that the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement has drawn criticism from many quarters, including former Prime Minister Dr. Mahathir. He's warned Malaysians that we are set to lose our sovereignty. And just yesterday, a coalition of NGOs together with the Parti Socialist Malaysia protested at Parliament. And tomorrow, there will be yet another protest. This time, it's the Malay Economic Action Council, which plans a protest at the Ministry of International Trade and Industry. That's MITI. Now, MITI General Secretary General Rebecca Fatima Santa Maria has come out reportedly has said that the agreement has not been reached in many areas, but her ministry will not compromise on Malaysia's sovereignty. MITI, as you know, is just one of many ministries involved in the negotiations. Now, to help us put the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, or the TPPA, into context, is Associate Professor Subramanian Pillay of Taylor's Business School. That's Taylor's University. Subra, thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thank you.
It's a big issue. Trade talks. The TPPA is one of many that are out there in the world now. Do we need them, and how do we understand this particular trade negotiation in terms of this history of trade negotiations?
Actually, trade talks have had a long history, especially after Second World War. And we had the GATT agreements those days. And in fact, even GATT came about because there was originally supposed to be an international trade organization together with IMF and World Bank. IMF and World Bank went through the U.S. Congress, but ITO did not go through the U.S. Congress after the U.S. had negotiated in the 1948. And as a result, they came to GATT. So finally, 40 years later, they set up WTO after the Uruguay round of talks. Mm-hmm. Now, in WTO, many developing countries were not well organized. So developed countries were able to get their agenda through, especially in trade and investment, in services, trade in services and investment rules and other important issues and copyright, intellectual property rights. So the subsequent round, the Doha round of talks was supposed to begin, it began about, 10 years ago?
2001.
2001, more than 10 years ago. And Doha round, we are supposed to further liberalize. And this time, some of the bigger developing countries got together and had their position stronger. And their main argument is, we want free trade, but we want you to open up the agriculture market. You have to stop subsidizing agriculture in developed countries. I mean, can you imagine Prince Charles gets subsidy from European Union for his farms? He's a poor farmer, you know? And we have to open up our markets for their manufactured goods. So developing countries got together, the major developing countries, and as a result, Doha round is not making much headway.
So in what way is the Trans-Pacific Agreement, Partnership Agreement, a response to that gridlock?
So that gridlock has led America especially to now negotiate direct bilateral free trade agreements or smaller grouping multilateral free trade agreements. The problem with this is there's an asymmetry here. America is a big market. When you negotiate a bilateral free trade agreement, you can sort of bully, within inverted commas, a small country into accepting your terms. So they find this going around having bilateral or smaller multilateral agreements, they get their way, you see? And this is why America has been promoting this kind of talks. In fact, this is not the first. They've already got bilateral free trade agreement with Singapore and a few other countries, Korea and others. So this Trans-Pacific and NAFTA, the other one, Canada and Mexico, you know. So now this Trans-Pacific thing is just an extension of that, basically. And that's why they're going with this. No?
Yeah, well, we saw the Doha talks. That was, what, in 2001? And it's been 12 years since the talks started. So that's been, what, 12 years of impasse. Nothing has happened. Now, with so many countries in the TPP, do you think that, you know, it might be difficult? Because each country member will have its own areas of sensitivity. Could it also lead to an impasse, especially if countries like Malaysia are saying that we're not going to compromise on national sovereignty?
It may lead to impasse. We can't rule that out. But if you look at the countries that are involved, there are two big economic superpowers, US and Japan. And Japan has just joined. Their joint GDP will outweigh their remaining 10 members. Because the other 10 are very small, actually. Singapore, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Mexico, Peru, Chile. And surprisingly, very few from ASEAN. You know, only Brunei, Malaysia, and Vietnam. And Singapore, of course. You know, the other ASEAN members are not in. So I think America and Japan will have a greater say in these talks, you know. And they come better prepared because they can put in more resources.
You know, one of the reasons apparently that was reported that the Prime Minister of Thailand saying that Thailand is not in the negotiations and not in this process is because she's waiting for public consultation and a buy-in from, you know, stakeholders in Thailand. Is that something, do you think, is necessary for trade agreements like this to work? Do you need a broad-based buy-in, or is it just sectarian interest that's going to win the day?
Actually, Stiglitz, you know, the Nobel Prize winner, Professor Joseph Stiglitz, actually has written a good piece a few days ago. And there he has pointed out that this trade talks, this TPPA, as well as a transatlantic one, the one between European Union and the U.S., are shrouded in secrecy and vested interests, particularly multinational firms from all countries are having their say, some even writing the text of these agreements, you know, whereas the general public seem to have no say in this because we don't know what's going on. So this agreement might actually benefit the multinational firms. I mean, it's not necessarily American multinationals. Even large corporations in all the member countries may benefit at the expense of the average public. And that is why I think it's important that more details must come out for us to assess. And we need a bigger discussion among the public before these terms are agreed upon, you know. Because if you leave it to the negotiators, sometimes in the process of negotiation, you're subject to a lot of pressure and you may concede. Although, you may have good intentions of safeguarding the sovereignty of your home country like Malaysia, but yet in the process, they'll say, come on, don't hold up just because of this one small thing. And then you'll give in. And in the long run, it may be very painful, you know.
I think your point about the position of strength that US and Japan have and the other big economies have is actually very interesting. But I want to know your viewpoint about from an ideological viewpoint. What is it that we should want? And in particular to that, I think labor rights are very important to any trade negotiation. So from an ideological viewpoint, what should we want as a country? Is it the protection of labor rights or have a totally open market where employment is at the ransom of capital searching for the lowest possible cost?
I mean, this is our problem. If you have free trade talks here, and if we give up our rights to legislate, especially on issues of environment and labor law, and if you're held to a standard which is the lowest common denominator, then many of these countries are going to suffer. And it's not just Malaysia, you know. Let me put it this way. The citizen in America may not also gain from these talks, you know. I think this is important to understand. It's not as if it's Americans versus Malaysians. It's ordinary people versus the big corporations. That's what's going on here. And I think we have to be careful because, so that's the point. And if we are going to give up some of our sovereignty, then I think we should think twice, you know?
There's a column written today in The Star that you pointed out to me earlier by Vera Pandian, where he makes reference to the negotiator for Chile who quit during these negotiations and he's come out with rather strong statements.
Yeah. Oh,
what do you think of his position?
I mean, it's surprising because Chile was one of the earliest supporters of this TPPA. In fact, I think they were the initial member group, you know, when it was only three or five countries. Chile was one of the countries. And he was heavily involved in the negotiation at that point. For him now, he is an insider. He's not against free trade. Chile has a free trade pact with the US. He's not against free trade. For him to come out and say such things, that means the terms that are being negotiated must be pretty bad for the average men on the street, men and women on the street. So I think we have to be careful. Because there are a couple of things I'm very concerned about personally. One is the whole issue of intellectual property, right? Or patents over medicines being lengthened, which means generic medicines are not allowed to come in quicker. You know, that's already bad, you know, because cost of medicines will go up. Will not go up, but will not come down when it ought to come down when generic medicines are available, which makes healthcare costs more expensive for poorer countries who can't afford, patented medicine. The other thing I think for people in the media and everybody else is this whole intellectual, copyright issue, you know. It's now going to be 120 years, extended 120 years after somebody dies. You know, they will have copyright, which means we won't have books in public domain. We have to pay every time you read something. You know?
Yeah, we're going to come back with more with Dr. Subramanian Pillai of Taylor's University's Business School in just a moment.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, and we're back with the Current Affairs program. We have with us Dr. Subramanian Pillai of Taylor's University's Business School, and we've been talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, its problems. Melissa, you had a question.
Yeah, well, just talking about the TTPA and when, you know, a lot of it has been talked about, the opaqueness of it, how it's shrouded in secrecy. I'm just wondering what can be done in terms of communicating to the public so more people understand about the TPPA and free trade agreements and all these acronyms that probably the men on the street wouldn't care less about. And, you know, with more transparency or with more feedback from stakeholders, no one's going to get everything they want. So in a negotiation like this, I'm thinking one of the reasons why it's kept secret is so that government agencies can argue for the best possible terms. But if everyone has a say in it, then they want what terms fit best for them.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point that you need some confidentiality. But in the case of TPPA, the degree of secrecy is much higher than any other previous trade talks. If you look at the way WTO talks go on, they do it in what's so-called green rooms in Geneva, you know. And there people have access, you know, in other words, NGOs have access to what's going on, right? So that they can present their views. They can also give their feedback to their government representatives on, you know, at the same time. Here, we only the bunch of negotiators just are in secret. At the end or somewhere at the beginning, they claim to be consulting. Like this round of talks, I find it hilarious that a whole week you negotiate, then on Saturday you allow a few guys to come and say, give their feedback, you know. When you don't know what's going on, how to give feedback. I mean, for example, we don't know what is going on this intellectual property right, how to give feedback, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, so it's very difficult, you know. So the degree of secrecy in this case is much higher than other rounds of free trade talks.
Now, one of the things is obviously there are people who are supportive of, in principle, of this Trans-Pacific Agreement. They think, you know, it will open markets up in the U.S. to Malaysian manufacturers. I mean, is there a strong argument for that, that, you know, that we need Malaysia being where it is in the kind of international division of labor, we need this pact?
No, to begin with, I'm not against free trade. I'm actually an international economist. My area is international finance and economics, so I am in favor of free trade. I think free trade has benefits. Countries should concentrate on what they have a comparative advantage in and all that. What I don't like is this is not really free trade. This is managed trade. For example, China is excluded from these talks. It is not in the talks. Now, Malaysia's biggest trading partner is China. So why are we negotiating a free trade pact while our biggest trading partner is not in the pact? And in fact, in future, China will be even bigger for us. Not only China, Indonesia will become a big trading partner for us as the Indonesian economy grows. And I'm sure 30, 40 years down the line, India will also be a big trading partner. These guys are all not in this talk. So therefore, why are we negotiating with the countries which are going to become less important for us in the future?
But if you look at the cumulative economy of the countries that are in these talks, it's about 40% of the world economy. Can Malaysia afford not to participate in the TPP?
Well, my answer to that is, if it's so important, how come our neighbouring countries, that includes Philippines, Thailand, Indonesia and Korea and China, are not a part of the 12 member countries? How come they are not rushing to negotiate? In fact, as Sharad pointed out, the Thai Prime Minister has said that we'll wait and see how it turns out before they decide to join or not. So I think we have to ask ourselves, why are the others not rushing to join?
There's one consideration, I think, with people who support this is the idea that in Malaysia, the economy is suffering from certain distortions, certain privileged access and issues of that sort, and that in entering into this free trade agreement, we will actually, in effect, dismantle those distortions locally. And do you think there's merit in that argument?
I mean, that is very roundabout way of reaching your objective. If you want to dismantle monopolies and protection and all that, then you should do it directly rather than through free trade talk, because here the disadvantages are going to be large also, and everybody has to bear it. For example, just because we want to dismantle the protection given to our car industry due to historical reasons, and we want to go into a free trade agreement and use that to dismantle free car industry, but then in return, we are giving up intellectual property rights on medicine and other things. So we are paying a lot for it. Is it or not? So I think if you want to dismantle that, that has to be done directly. And there has to be strong leadership to show why protecting these industries is not good for our country, and get rid of it regardless of free trade talks.
You mentioned something about the American crop subsidy earlier. Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that this is something that would be on the table with the TPPA? Because this obviously has a lot of implication on domestic food security policy.
Yeah. Yeah, agriculture is going to be one of the big issues here. And the problem is, it's not so clear-cut as you think. It's not just direct subsidy. For example, U.S., They may stop direct subsidy to farmers, but there's a lot of indirect subsidy. For example, water in California, where they grow all these major crops in a desert, there's a lot of water being supplied, you know, and that water is coming through public funds. So that's a subsidy, you know, for you to grow crops in a desert area.
So there's also the corn ethanol subsidies and also the wheat price floor support as well. Right?
Yeah, they may remove that. I mean, as part of the deal. I'm not sure they will remove, because farming states are very important in American legislature, you know, and I don't think it's going to be easy. So this is all part of the negotiations, you know, and we don't know. I mean, ideally, I think we should negotiate through the Doha round of talks, and it should be multilateral. I think that's where we should focus our attention. I think countries in this region should go for Doha and push for talks there, so that every country benefits from trade talks and not selected group of countries.
Well, Doha's been gridlocked for 12 years. So, you know, I think a lot of people have just given hope on Doha, especially the private sector has lost a lot of respect for the Doha talks. Dr. Subrab, I have a question for you. In terms of, because it is so opaque and so closed, do you think that there is sufficient trust that the government agencies involved in the talks will argue for the best possible terms?
I think it's a problem not only in Malaysia, but in many other countries which are negotiating. People are losing their faith in the agencies that, and the ministries that are negotiating. You can see these kind of protest movements, not only in Malaysia. In fact, Malaysia, I think, is small compared to many other countries, you know, like New Zealand, Australia, Canada, you know, and even in Peru and other places, you know, because I think people are worried that their rights, many of their concerns are being pushed over in the talks by multinational companies. We don't know. That's our problem. They may not be, actually. We may get what we want, but we don't know, you know.
But what we do know are the results of the previous free trade agreements, right? For instance, on the NAFTA, you know, what is your prognosis on that? Are the Mexicans happy about the NAFTA?
I think NAFTA benefit on the whole benefited Mexicans because Mexicans had a lower cost structure. All right. So therefore, industries moved into Mexico, especially American industries. You can see on the border area, you know, whole lot of industries have gone over there. So it may have benefited Mexico. But remember, those kind of agreements are trade distorting, you know, because when a company sets up a factory in Mexico, because it's easier access to US, it's preventing other countries where have better comparative advantage from exporting to US. So the American citizen actually is losing out by setting this kind of regional agreement. If they had a multilateral agreement, then companies will go to places which is the best to produce and they can export to US at the cheapest possible, or for that matter, anywhere. So it's actually not, it's a trade diversion, you know, actually, not trade creating these kind of talks, you know. So we have to be careful about this, what they call spaghetti bowl of agreements, you know. We are having many side agreements all around, and it's not very nice. I think the better way is to go through WTO and have a bigger, you know, a more multilateral agreement, you know.
What would what would push the Doha talks towards to some sort of, you know, movement? How would it? How do we get there? We're in fact running out of time, so we're going to have to bring you back, you know, Dr. Subra. This has been fascinating.
BFM 89.9, the business station.
You were saying that you favor multilateral talks, and Melissa noted, you know, that the talks have been stalled for some 12 years now. What would push these talks along?
I think the main thing is developed countries, particularly European Union and the U.S., must concede on the agriculture subsidies. They must reduce subsidies to their farmers so that we, developing countries which have comparative advantage in agriculture, can export their products. Then only you can bring about real economic growth. And in the long run, it actually benefits both U.S. and European Union. Their food prices will go down. And their manufacturing industry will get better. Their services industry will get better because they'll find bigger markets in developing countries. You see or not? So in the long run, it's good. But short run interests prevail. So that we have to push for that. And I think with enough political will, it can happen.
Right. So that's a political issue for them to resolve before these trade talks can continue.
That's right.
One of the things that has come up, in the criticism about this particular round is of trade talks around the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement is the Investor State Dispute Settlement Mechanism. Now, the ISDS, as the acronym is known, Charles Santiago, MP for, I think, Klang, has mentioned this, and people at the Malay Economic Action Council have also mentioned this as a problem because they see it as directly affecting sovereignty. Could you kind of enlighten us a little bit about this?
Yeah, this is actually, it is a area where member countries are going to lose their sovereignty in terms of any disputes between investor, which is usually multinational companies, and the country, the host country. So basically, it's like this. For example, let me give an example. Let's take an example which is more interesting. Let's say Malaysia, IHH, this Malaysian conglomerate, sets up a chain of hospitals in the US, right? They buy over and they set up a chain of private hospitals and all that. Then suddenly, with some stroke of fortune, America decides to introduce national health service like Canada or UK. And that means the private hospitals there, their business is going to be affected. Which means IHH can sue the American government, right, over loss of business and revenue and profits in perpetuity, all right, and go to an international adjudicator, not in an American court, and get the American government to compensate them. I mean, I'm putting it this unrealistic example. Of course, it's not going to happen. It's going to be the other way around. Multinational companies from developed countries are going to invest in countries like Malaysia and Peru and Chile and all that. And if we change laws, which is going to affect their profit, and these laws may be good for the citizens, like healthcare, education. For example, providing free education, which means private universities will lose out. You know, private colleges and universities will lose out if government gives free education higher education for everybody. That case, if it's a foreign investor, they can sue the government. You know?
Does it mean that political platforms and programs have to comply with these trade agreements?
Yes. This is what it means. You know, and we have to conform to standards imposed by this agreement.
So it's not simply a question of dealing with contractual disputes. I failed to live up to some sort of agreement to provide you this, that, and the other.
No. That we already have. Now you can do that. I mean, we promise a company, you come in and invest in Bayan Lapas free trade zone, and we do this. And if you don't do that, they can actually take us to court, which a local court, and they can win because there is a contract. Here it's not; it's an open thing. You know, it's not a contract. So you have changed the structure of the economy. So I, as a company, came in here assuming that this will be the structure. So now, because you changed, for the better or worse of the people, we are losing. So you pay for us. Right now, I can't remember the details. There's a case: an American company is suing the Canadian government over some changes for millions of dollars. You know, actually, a court case is going on now, right now. You know?
That's the
implication. Under NAFTA agreement, the North American Free Trade.
Well, I'm just wondering, with, for instance, using country trade disputes, for instance, with China and the US, that's always brought up to the World Trade Organization right. platform. Can this also be applied here in this case?
No, this is not going to go to WTO, because this is a separate adjudication, because it's not part of the WTO. In WTO agreements, you can go to World Trade. There's a settlement dispute mechanism, right. which is working reasonably well. You know, and in fact, as an example, America is subsidizing its cotton farmers. Mm-hmm. And Brazil and many other countries complained, and they went to WTO. WTO ruled against America. So America had to either stop subsidizing or pay compensation. So you know what they did? They bribed the Brazilian government to withdraw the complaint so that they don't have to pay anybody anything. So the farmers, I'm not saying this, Stiglitz is saying this, so I have to believe him, you know, that the farmers in Egypt and India and others are losing out, Israel. And so, but I'm pointing out there is a mechanism, WTO, which I think is reasonably fair. You know?
Okay, yeah. So that, but that doesn't apply to this case. In this case, you're saying it's a much more open kind of situation where you can fail to live up to the expectations by actually changing policy.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that that's come up in our discussions is the question of China. We do a lot of trade with China, and a lot of our we're part of a manufacturing chain with China. But if China is not part of this TPPA, what happens with this aspect or this dimension of our trade or manufacturing?
Yeah, actually, that's a very important issue. I think this has not been discussed enough in this TPPA. Many people, the critics also don't point this out. Mm-hmm. I think because Malaysia, together with a few East Asian countries, both Southeast Asia, are part of a production network, an efficient production network, particularly in the electronics industry, where different countries produce different things and they're finally assembled either in China or some other country. So we have what is known as an intermediate goods trade in intermediate goods. Now, if China is out of these talks, sometime or other, there could be what you call non-tariff barriers. And as a result, our smooth production network may get disrupted. And I think this is important because if we don't bring in China into any of our trade negotiations, I think we may, as small countries who have a lot of trade with China, and particularly Southeast Asian countries, we are going to suffer, you know. And I think this is important. Right.
Thank you very much. You know, that's been extraordinarily enlightening. We've been talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, and the talks are going on now, the 18th round in Kota Kinabalu. It's going on to the 25th of the month, and we need to bring some focus on that question. It's a major, major story. Thank you so much, Dr. Subramanian Pillai. Dr. Pillai is from the Taylor's University's Business School. He's an associate professor there.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.